we're going to talk about today in parts by Yaakov Kude is about the keel, about the sink, the laver that was used, that was made out of the mirrors of the woman of Kli Yisrael. So in Parak Lama Chesh, Pasuk Chesh, it says, Vayas the Kure Nechoshes, they made that laver out of copper. That's Kana Nechoshes, the base was also made out of copper. With the Maros Hatzovos, with the mirrors of those women, the Tzovos is a reference to those who are not sure, Tzavu Patach Olmoid, that gathered up around the entrance of the Olmoid. Notice, there's a bunch of weird words within the pasuk itself. The word sovos is a weird word. Savu, which is repeated right over there. And the maros is also a strange thing. We don't have any other information from the pasuk other than this. This is all we learn about the sink itself. So the Medrash Tanchuma tells us that the Egyptians worked their slaves to exhaustion when they were sitting in the midbar. They even made gzeros. They made gzeros that they were not allowed to be home at night. They weren't allowed to be together with their wives as much as they could. They wanted to make sure that the Jews would not have any children. Even when the men came home, they would be exhausted. They wouldn't be able to be together with their wives. Because of that, they were just weary and they wouldn't take it. So what the wives did was instead they brought themselves to the fields. What they did was they brought their husbands food and drink. In fact, the Medrash says an amazing thing. They used to draw water from the wells, and from the wells they got fish. And that little fish with the water, I don't know why they would drink that water, but regardless, they took that water with the fish inside there. They brought it out to their husbands who were out in the fields. And after refreshing them, after they were able to eat and drink and everything, they would take out mirrors and entice their husbands with the mirrors. Those mirrors were the ones that they now were bringing up to be donated to the Mishkan. Now, that was the reason why they had become pregnant. There was something there. Nonetheless, it is strange that that's the reason why these things were taken. Rashi mentions this medrash in a little bit of a different manner, but he basically says it this way. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu looked at this whole donation, looked at it askance. He said, there's something wrong here. This can't be reality. He assumed that the mirrors were used for negative purposes, which in most cases they are, that people are using the mirrors for something just to be able to entice men to do something which is improper. And because of that, he said, there's no way I'm going to be allowed to take this. This can't be used, and we're not going to take this donation. He even told the men to hit the woman. Grab sticks and hit the woman for donating such things to the Mishkan itself. And that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came along and said, absolutely not. Now, to start off, the Be'er Heitev says is even hinted to in the Pasuk. It's weird because we see the donations being given in the first part of the Parsha where they brought everything they were supposed to give, the gold, the silver, the copper, as everything else. This is put toward the very, very end of Vayakhel. It's just thrown into the end where you just, and by the way, there were these maros, these mirrors that the woman brought that ended up being used as a cure. And that's it. That's all the information that we have. Nothing else is added.
The parsha that Moshe would say, that the mirrors would say that Moshe was allowed to hit their wives for bringing mirrors.
I have jokes to make, but I'm not going to make those jokes. But yes, Anakana, you're right. Obviously, it wouldn't be that way. But in order, he thought they were being insolent. He thought that they were purposely doing something wrong. And that's why he said something has to happen. You can't allow this to happen over here. That's the idea. The Be'er Heitev says the hint is that it's put apart. It's taken away from where it is by everywhere else. And it says that it was the Pesach Ol Moed. It was written by the door of the Ol Moed instead of by the Ol Moed itself. Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't let them bring it into the Ol Moed itself. At that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, accept them. Ki elu chaviven alai min hakol, said Moshe Rabbeinu. These are more beloved to me than anything else. There's nothing else like this. I want these mirrors more than I want anything else. Through them, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. Through them, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, these women were able to make armies of children in Mitzrayim. They were able to have hundreds of kids, thousands of kids, even hundreds of thousands of kids. And that's the Maros HaTzovos. The Tzovos referred to the armies of children that were created by what he was doing. Their intentions were only good. They were all L'shem Shamayim. That's the idea of what this was, that this is purely L'shem Shamayim. That should be donated to the Mishkan. That's what could be given over to the Mishkan itself. Now, that's Rashi. That's the Medrash Tanchuma. That's where you get it from. Let's go a little bit further into it to try to understand what this is talking about. The Kli Yisrael says they brought these mirrors on purpose. They wanted to show how great they were, these women. That they had fought their own private war against the Egyptians. That's what they were able to do. Meaning, it's one thing to be able to submit to what your Egyptian captors are trying to say to you. It's another thing to be able to fight in your own way, in a private way almost, and say, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go up against. These women were going very much against the people that were in charge of them, and they were showing, here's what we did. It's almost as if a king sends out a general with all of his army men to go out and fight a war. They come back with those weapons that they used in that war. They come out with all those weapons, and they show it in front of the king. They place it down in in front of the king and say, we're donating this to your armory, your personal armory, to show that we did everything for you. We didn't want to fight this war, but we felt that this is the right thing to do. In this situation, here's our arms, our swords, our guns, everything that we use. That's why the Kliuchers said they were doing this, to show that they were never selfish. They weren't doing this out of taiva. They were doing it for the right reasons, and thus they were accepted. Reb Dessler has a great, great piece in Michta Melio just about this thing itself. It's on page 228 in Chelek Aleph. He says there's a secret behind what goes on in the Mishkan. I actually spoke about it here 3 weeks ago about what this means. By the Mishkan, everything had to be donated lishma. It had to be l'shem shemayim. There was no such thing as donating something shelo l'shem shemayim. So we all know the line, right? Mitok shelo lishma, ba lishma. Right? If you do something shelo lishma, you'll eventually come to do it lishma. I'm sure you're going to find a lot of people that have been doing things shelo lishma for years and years and years, and they are not yet lishma. Where's that guarantee? Mitok shelo lishma, ba lishma should be a guarantee that it's going to lead you up to a point where you're going to, but it doesn't happen. We see that it doesn't happen. A person could be 100 years old, and they've been doing it for 100 years, and they still have not been able to do it lishma. What does that mean over here, that it's eventually going to be lishma?
More, maybe
he's
100 years old. We don't know what his internal thoughts are.
I mean, you're right, but it was at least
shalom
lishma.
Like,
he's at 25. You're right, but then it should be more lishma, or you should at least feel it. It should feel like it's getting better. And sometimes, or I should say most of the time, it's not like it's getting better. As you get older, sometimes it takes a little bit more shalom lishma to get there, like a chant or drumettes or something that might get you there. It's not always going to get you to be lishma. So what does that mean exactly? It says mechta melio, that's not what it means. It does not mean that if you keep doing something shelo lishma, that eventually it'll be lishma. It says shemitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. It means like this: when you do something shelo lishma, you can make it lishma. In every situation where you have something happen, where you're doing something not for the right reasons, you can make it that you're doing it for the right reasons. You can take that situation and make it good. For example, you're eating cholent on Shabbos. Well, we might as well do it now. You're eating cholent on a Thursday night, okay? Instead of an oneg Shabbos. You're eating it on a Thursday night. There's two things you could do. You could either say to yourself, I'm just pressing. I'm just eating whatever I want at whatever point just because I'm hungry and I'm just going to fulfill that taiva. Or you're going to say, this is going to get me more awake. This is going to get me more into it. I'm now going to understand it a little bit better because I'm paying attention more because I'm eating and I'm a little bit more into it. That's the idea of mitok shelo lishma. From that lo lishma, you can bring about a lishma situation. You can do that if it's done correctly. That's the way to be able to do it correctly. That's exactly what these women did. They took a situation that was shelo lishma. Mirrors are filled with taiva ideas. Obviously, the people were using them somewhat in an improper fashion. It can be made into lishma. You can create a situation where you're making children that would serve Hashem that would not be there otherwise. If utilized correctly, you can subdue that koach of chol, of the mundane, and make it kodesh. You can make it holier, which is the entire purpose of the Mishkan in the first place. The whole Mishkan, I mean, it's the strangest thing in the world. In the Mishkan, this house of God, you have a table, you have a little mizbeach, a little sacrificing area, right? You have a menorah, a little lamp, and then you have a little chest. And that's it. Why are we using these physical objects to represent something that's so entirely holy? Shouldn't it be things that have no shaykhus outside? For example, the kruvim were things that you could not make anywhere else. If you made kruvim outside the Mishkan, that would be a avodah zarah. The whole Mishkan should have been a situation where you have crazy things that don't exist anywhere else, not just a table and a menorah and all the things they have elsewhere. But that's the point of the Mishkan. The point of the Mishkan is to take the mundane and make it holy. See, something can be a table, but if used correctly, it could be a shulchan in the Mishkan. A menorah is just a lamp. I mean, what's the big deal? You just have a lamp, right? But if utilized correctly, it could be a lamp that's used for kedusha. That's what you can do. Mitoch that shelo lishma, you can create a lishma. And that's what it means. You eat shalom, you can make it kadosh. You can make your Shabbos meal kadosh. You can make everything in your lives kadosh. That's what the Michta Melio says. And that's what these women did. They took the mirrors and made them holy. They were able to make something that normally is not used for holiness in into something holy. That's the pshat behind it. Rip Hirsch says it's not just the materials that were donated, the fact that they were copper mirrors. It's the shape as well. These ideas that obviously the mirror is there to stress the physical body, to make you feel that your physical body is perfect. They donated specifically this to the Mishkan to show that the physical person, the human body, is exactly what needs to be fitted into what the Mishkan is all about. You're going to make yourself, you're going to take your physical body and you're going to create Kedusha. Beautiful clothing can become Kadosh. That's exactly what they did, says Rav Hirsch. So therefore, the mirrors were not melted down. They took the actual mirrors, and this is the expertise of Bezalel, and formed them in such a way, the big and the small mirrors, put them together in such a way that it formed the Kior as was. There was no melting down of any of the copper. There was no taking the mirrors and manipulating them to be able to form. He was able to form the actual Kior from the actual mirrors, that every woman would be able to look at their own mirror and say, that's mine. That's what I donated to the Mishkan. Something that I used, something that couldn't be used for Kedusha, I created Kedusha out of it. That's the idea that's expressed through these mirrors and through the Kior itself. So that's in Bergasa. What? See, that's the funny part. We don't know how many mirrors were donated. It could have been 6 women. It could have been 600 women. I don't know how big the mirrors were. Were the mirrors like these huge, big ones that they have on like the sides of rooms? Or were they small little mirrors that they kept with them? I would have assumed that they were like the tefillin mirrors that everybody has, right? Those tiny little tefillin mirrors that they had a little piece of copper and something that looked nice and whatever it was. So I don't know. We don't know. And in fact, the Ramban says that they took as many mirrors as they had and they created the Kior out of that. But there's no sizes mentioned by the Kior anywhere. In the Brisa Malachas HaMishkan, not in the Chumash, not in Rishonim, nowhere does it mention the size of the Kior. So it could have been huge.
These are also similar measure spots like copper mirrors being used when the story of Midian, they gave it the copper.
They took the stuff, the kumas, and all the other stuff that they took out of the war itself, but it doesn't mention mirrors specifically. Mirrors aren't mentioned specifically there, but yes, there were other things that were definitely donated with them. Now, the Ibn Ezra says, and this is something that I think we know, women are a little bit more into appearances in Olam Hazeh in this world than men are. Now, that's not always true. You can find women that are not like that. You can find manly women, and you can find womanly men. I mean, that's definitely true, right? That you can find, there are obviously men that care more about their appearance than any woman would. But whatever it is, women use mirrors in a vain way, says the Ibn Ezra. These women specifically had turned away from such things. These were women that would stand by the tent of Moshe Rabbeinu and would daven and learn and do everything they can. They would just be listening to Moshe Rabbeinu darshan the mitzvot all day long. They didn't care about anything else. And since they were in the Midbar, they didn't have to worry about Parnassa. They didn't really have to worry about other things. And I'm sure there were older women that were not able to have children at this time. They were the ones who stood by watching what was going on, making sure that they understood as much as they could from what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them. After listening to him speak about Mesiris Nefesh, giving up their lives to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and about working hard to be able to do what you're supposed to do, they agreed. You know what? If this is what Mesiris Nefesh is, this is what it means to give up your life to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're going to be Moser Nefesh. They took away their most prized possessions, their mirrors, and they gave that over. That was their form of Mesiris Nefesh, says the Ibn Ezra. And that's what he said, that the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban both say that the Kior had no shear, that they kept giving however much it was. I don't know if this was the catalyst that people started bringing because the original woman started bringing, or if it was just them themselves. Regardless, Moshe Rabbeinu accepted them. The whole area was filled with marah so they could see what it was all about. Rabbi Victor Miller also points out that there was other copper available. They had copper that was just donated on its own without the mirrors, but none of that was used over here because this was the Mesiris Nefesh of the woman. They were willing to give themselves up. And that teaches us the lesson itself, that we should be willing to give up certain things in order to give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That although that means that we're going to lose out on X, Y, and Z, we should be willing to give up our most prized possessions to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the idea of Hevel versus Kain. Kain saying that I'm not going to give up what I have for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hevel saying I'm going to give up my most precious possessions, Mechalbehen, from the greatest of the flocks that I have, the fats of the cows, that's what I'm going to give up. And that's what the woman did by giving the mirrors their most prized possessions, aside from, I'm assuming, their jewels that they had already donated. That's what it means by that. The Shach says an unreal thing. He says that they were so tenuous, these women, they didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu to know that they were listening. So they took the mirrors and they formed an elaborate scheme where they would would be able to see Moshe Rabbeinu without Moshe Rabbeinu seeing them. They would all be able to look in all these mirrors. They put it on the outside that they were not the mirrors used in Mitzrayim. They were mirrors used right then to be able to see what was going on by Moshe Rabbeinu, and they would be able to see Moshe Rabbeinu's face while he was speaking. The pasuk says, "Vayuei necha ros esmorecha," that your eyes should be seeing your teacher as he's teaching. And because of that, they were able to see Moshe Rabbeinu speak, and they used the mirrors for that. And they gave up that. They gave up their ability to see Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what they were willing to do. Now, the Chassam Sofer says that it sounds like that the women were sitting in their own base medrash on the outside. Chassam Sofer's problem with that is we never see anywhere in any medrash that there's such a thing as a base medrash for women. We don't see it. There was a base medrash for men. It says that when they had the extra stuff that they donated for the Mishkan, they took the extra stuff and they gave it right over to this base medrash. They created a base medrash right outside of the regular Mishkan. But we never see that women were there. We see that men were there. So he said, I don't understand. Where did these women go to? Where was this base medrash that it seems they were in? What does that mean? So he says the following, Chassam Sofer says, if a woman is tovea her husband that they should be together, l'shem shamayim, and she does so in a proper way, the child that's formed from that relationship is a baal Torah. He's able to learn Torah like nobody else. Leah brought Yaakov into her tent. And when she did that, she had a child named Yisachar, the person who was the chamor who learned Torah all day long. There was nobody like Yisachar when it came to that. And it's because Leah specifically asked, specifically said, I want my husband to be together with me, l'shem shamayim. Therefore, she had children like that. These women were like that as well. They were toveah their husbands in Mitzrayim, and their children grew up to be huge talmid chachamim, and all they wanted to do was sit and listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. So the base medrash that was built was for them. It was for the children of those women. It's not that the women were listening to Moshe Rabbeinu all day long, according to Chassam Sofer. It was the children of these women that were sitting outside the base medrash. They were the tzovos, the armies of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that were formed from what they did in Mitzrayim, and they were the ones listening, but not that the woman. So it's not as progressive. I guess that's what the Chassam Sofer is trying to say. It wasn't as progressive as he thought it was. It wasn't the woman listening. It was more the men that were there, and they were doing this. The Netziv also goes with the same idea. I don't know if he came before the Chassam Sofer in this board. He lived after the Chassam Sofer, but I don't know if he saw the Chassam Sofer and added to it, or if this is on his own. The Netziv asks, women obviously have an issue in getting to Olam Haba. The Gemara says that the way to get to Olam Haba is by learning Torah. That's the idea, one way of getting into Olam Haba. Women don't have that. So how do you get there? How are you able to get there if you don't have Torah? So the Gemara answers, Brachos Yud Zayin says, the women are Zochet Olam Haba by doing one simple thing. What do you mean? Yes and no. There's another Gemara in Ksuvah, Samach Zayin or Samach Ches, that mentions that when they were in the Shuk, they kept asking Eliyahu HaNavi, who's going to Olam Haba? That the Broka Chasida, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, asked, who's going to Olam Haba? And Eliyahu HaNavi pointed out these random people in the Shuk that had no Sheikhet to Torah. A person who was dressed like the non-Jews of the time, and two clowns that were making people happy. And those people, said Eliyahu HaNavi, are guaranteed a Chelek in Olam Haba. Well, great tell me to come and know. It's unbelievable. Rabbi, who is the one that died in the Sarug Malchus? Rabbi Hananya ben Tradin, Rabbi Meir's father-in-law. Rabbi Hananya ben Tradin, in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, he said when he was, Rabbi Hananya ben Tradin was being brought out to, he was teaching Torah in the streets to a bunch of people, and even though the Romans had already made an edict that you couldn't teach any Torah, Rabbi Hananya ben Tradin was doing it anyway, and he's standing there and he's teaching Torah for Rabbim, even though the Romans were arresting anybody who was doing so, and he was called in by one of the Gedolim of the generation. I can't remember, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma it might have been, if I remember correctly. Yeah, I think it was Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma called him and he said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm teaching Torah Barabbam. He said, what are you going to do when the Romans catch you? He said, Hashem Yerachem. Hashem should have mercy. He said, Hashem Yerachem, I'm telling you things that make sense. And you're telling me Hashem Yerachem? I'd be surprised if you weren't burned together with the Sefer Torah that you're teaching out of. That's what he told Rabbi Hanan ben Tradin. And then Rabbi Hanan ben Tradin said to Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma, Ma'ani l'olam haba. Am I going to have a chelik in olam haba? Unbelievable. What do you mean you have a chelik in olam haba? He was teaching Torah in the streets, but Rabbim in front of everybody. This man was one of the greatest people. He's part of the Asarug Gemalchus, and he's asking if he has a chelik in olam haba. And you know what he answered, Rabbi Yosef Kisma's answer? His answer was, what did you do? What do you do? What do you do? What do you do? You just, he teaches Torah all day long. What does he do? She said, one time, I had money in my pocket that I meant to give to Matanos Lev Yonin, and I had other money in my other pocket, and I got them mixed up together, so I gave it all to Matanos Lev Yonin. That's what I did. So I gave everything to Matanos Lev Yonin. So then Rabbi Yosef Kisser said, oh, my chelik should be like your chelik in Olam Haba. It's strange, but that's the Gemara. So I, when it comes to something like this, yes, the Gemara says that the only way to get to Olam Haba is by having this chelik in Torah. And therefore it asks, Nashim b'may zachin, how are they zocha to be able to get a chelik? But you see, clearly there are other ways to get to Olam Haba that are not with Torah. So I don't have an answer to that question.
One is to punch your ticket there, and then once you're there, you get...
Then you get a higher chelik.
Or a different chelik.
Yeah.
It seems like all those other examples, you need to do something b'nei adam ha'chavero. Meaning when Eliyahu was
something between all those three examples are.
Right.
Yeah.
But somebody who says the Torah does not necessarily mean something Benjamin Machavero.
Yeah, that's like the teaching. Yeah, that's the teaching would be. Yeah, but it has to be something more special. But there's no question. There's no question that obviously Torah is there. But the Gemara asks this question: it's how are women zocha if they can't learn, if they don't learn Torah? So the Gemara says, "Ba'asnui gavrayu b'midrasha," by allowing their husbands to go to the Beis Medrash. Not every woman can allow their husbands to go to the Beis Medrash. It doesn't happen all the time. But by allowing their husbands to go to the Beis Medrash, that gives them a chelik. Says the Nesiv, the way to learn Torah, the first thing you need in order to learn Torah, to really get it, is to have tahara and kedusha. To build yourself up, make yourself more kadosh, more tahor, that allows you to be there. Miriam, through her schus, was the be'er, the well that allowed the men to have water, not only to drink, but to dip themselves in, and to be mekadesh themselves, and metahir themselves, in order to learn Torah. That was a mikvah, says the Nitziv, for them to be able to sit in, to prepare themselves for learning and davening. Miriam's whole schus was that she brought people closer to learning Torah, to understand it better, to do it better, to do everything better, and she was the teacher of all the women. So all the women took that from Miriam. They understood from Miriam, that was their idea. That's what they had to do. So therefore, the woman decided, like Miriam, we'll make a kiyur. We'll take something. We'll make this specific thing, says the Nitziv, to allow the Kohanim to be ready to do the Avodah. That's where they wash their hands and feet. And for Moshe Rabbeinu to use for his learning. To be able to wash his hands before learning. That was the great switch that the woman had, and that they learned from Miriam itself. That's the Nitziv's idea. So again, it's the opposite. It's not that the women were listening to the Torah necessarily. It's that they wanted someone else to learn, and they were the catalyst for them learning, and therefore they were zocha to great things. That's that. Now we're getting into other ideas behind the kiyur. That's how it got there, and the way that the women were involved. The Rambam points out that Moshe Rabbeinu had no problem with the kumas. The kumas was a chastity belt, something that went around the waists of women, so that the women would not be taken by men, right, when they were in bad straits. So the kumas was there. The women donated their kumazim to the Mishkan. And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't bat an eyelash. He was fine with that, even though it was technically glorified underwear. He was fine with that being donated. But this, the mirrors, he's sitting there and he's saying, I don't know if I can take this. And he was hitting the women that were bringing them? You just accepted all of that. Why would that be different? He accepted bracelets. He allowed necklaces. He allowed everything else. But this he can't allow. What's the difference between the mirror and all those other things, all the other jewelry that women have that are also, in theory, for Yates or Hara purposes? What's the difference? They're all for beauty. What's the difference? Especially the kumas. So there are a lot of answers. There are about 7 answers given just by the Rishonim before you get to the Achronim. The Ramban says, because it was brought, all the kumas and all those were brought with other objects to be melted down and to be made into different objects. Therefore, it was okay. They weren't using the kumas as something in the Mishkan. They were going to melt down that gold, change the tzura, make it a totally different item, and then take that and make something else with it. That would have been okay because it's no longer the same object that it was before. As opposed to here, the mirrors, they were going to use the mirrors as they were. The mirrors were just going to be placed onto something. And that, he said, I don't think I can do that. I don't think that's able to do. Weird what?
Their wife died. The idea initially thinks that they weren't going to melt them down.
That they weren't the mirrors themselves?
Yeah.
Because the women were saying, we want these mirrors to be used for the kiyur. That was their idea and what they wanted. And therefore, because of that, they said, listen, this is what we want. We want this to be done. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't allow that to happen. There's no way. Maybe to melt it down, but that they weren't accepting it. The Tanakh Raza, the Panach Raza is another Rishon that quotes down the exact same thing. It says clearly, the mirrors remained the Ein. They remained as they were. You knew what they were once used for, and that he wasn't sure what to do with. There were other mirror issues that he had with the mirror, although I didn't quote it over here. The Moshe of Zakenin, who's also a Baal Tosos, says two issues. Number one, if the Kiyur is made of mirrors, and the Kohanim have to wash their hands in front of this Kiyur. Now remember, the Kohanim have to do a bit of they have to be acrobats. They have to stand on the back of their ankles and be standing while touching their feet. And the washing of the hands and the feet had to be simultaneous. You could not wash your hands and then wash your feet. The hands and the feet were done at the exact same time, and they had to be able to bend themselves over to do so. I consider myself somewhat of a sports player, somewhat. Okay, I'm not like my brother Uri, but I'm still like, I consider it somewhat there. Okay, so not as much. So you're just as good, Rafi. No, you're better. You're just. I know, but I don't consider it the same, but. I can't do this at all. I can barely touch my knees when I'm standing up, let alone get on the backs of my feet and go there. But every Kohen had to do so. That's how you did the Avodah. In theory, you could bend your knees to do it, and then you'd be able to go like that. But still, I can't do it for more than 6 seconds without hurting my back. But every Kohen had to be able to do so. Think about this for a second. If he's bending over while standing in front of the Kiyur, allowing himself to be washed, that means he's bending in front of his own reflection, seeing his own reflection and bowing down. We don't allow that. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't make the Kiyur out of mirrors, because simply put, if I do, then I'm causing them to bow down to their own image, seeing their own image while they're doing this. I can't allow that to happen. That's another thing that he had. Or the Moshe Zakenim says something otherwise. He says the following. He says, and this is also a crazy little thing, if the Kohanim put the Kiyur in the exact right position, right in front of the Heichal, which is where the Kiyur actually stood, then anyone could see what the Kohanim were doing in the Heichal. Everybody was able to see what they were doing inside the area, which was a private area, which nobody could look in. The Urios were on top. There were little doors around the side. But with the mirrors, these mirrors that were standing there, wherever you were in the courtyard, because of the roundish mirrors, you could see the Kohanim doing their Avodah in the Mishkan. How is that allowed? Are we allowed to watch the Kohanim doing what they're doing inside there? He wasn't sure. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, both of those don't matter. I'm going to be fine with both of those. Allow the Kohanim to be there. Allow the Kohanim to see that. Rav Avigdor Miller says, that these mirrors, they're being used for preparation. He says they're also involved in preparation. That's something you can see inside. That's there. But the Shach says a brilliant reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was okay with it and actually wanted it, preferred it this way. It says the following. You know, it's a strange halacha of what happens when you go on when you see a woman who's not dressed properly. But you have to see her. Either she's a client of yours, or she's somebody that you have to have a conversation with. How should you look at that woman? Does it make a difference to look at her directly or indirectly? To see her through, for example, through a mirrored image. Does that matter? Halachically, by the Sharim Mitzvim Ba'alacha and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, he brings from different poskim that it's always better to look at a woman, if you have to, through a mirror. Again, this is not a heter, but nonetheless, to look at a woman through a mirror if she's dressed improperly, rather than look at her directly. Because at least you're only seeing the image, but you're not seeing the actual person. The Kohanim, when they brought the korbanos of certain women, and women do have to bring korbanos quite often, not only for a chatas or an ashram or an ola if they do something wrong, but there's also when they're a yoledes, if a zava, a mitzora, something like that, mitzoras, if they get something, they have to bring korbanos. When they brought korbanos, they have to be seen. The Kohen has to look at the face of the person that he's giving the korbanon for. So when he's being mekabel the dam, he has to see the face of the person who's bringing that korban. But how are you going to see the face of the woman? That's improper. It's improper to stare at the face of a woman who's standing in the Mishkan. So everybody answers, in the Mishkan, they didn't have those thoughts. But how could you rely on that? I'm sure there were Kohanim that were not the greatest of Kohanim. And to tell them, the lichatila, you have to be staring at the faces of women who might have been beautiful, how can you allow that lichatila? Says the Gemara. They stared at the mirrors. They used the kior, says that, I shouldn't say the Gemara, the Shach says based on the Gemara, that they looked at the kior, stared at the woman through the kior, and therefore they were able to see the woman, and that was what they did in order to make sure that they were the person that they were properly bringing that korban for. That's what the Shach says.
Because if you still look at the woman, looking at the mirror doesn't help, you have to look at the woman. Mm-hmm. And if the word that you have to worry, no, they're looking at her, looking at the mirror, yeah, the reflection, but you're still looking at her.
See, that, there is a little bit less of the hirhurim that would be there by the mirror itself. It would also remind the Kohanim that they have to concentrate. When looking at the woman directly, they might let their mind wander. But when looking at the mirror, they realize, I have to do it this way, and that's that. But, nonetheless, listen, it could be that it was also a distorted image. You've all seen fun mirrors before, you know, the little fun mirrors, and I would assume the kiora was not straight mirrors, that they were rounded a little bit, which could be that it made the person look either really, really skinny or really big. But nonetheless, that image was all they had to see. The point of the seeing of the person that was bringing the korban was to make sure that they were into it and they were concentrating on what they were doing and that they weren't thinking something different. That was the idea of what they were doing. So therefore, seeing the mirror and looking at the person's face was good enough. Not to see the entire body or the entire person, but just that. That would be good enough. Nonetheless, the Shach says that's the reason why we do it, and that could be a psak halacha for certain reasons as well. As a side note, the Chassam Sofer says there is a negative connotation to using the mirrors. There's a reason why the mirrors were not used, for example, for the Aron Kodesh, or for the menorah, or for the Shulchan, but only the Kior. The Kior was to wash off the dirt that was on the people. Because the mirrors were used somewhat improperly, and sometimes were used for bad purposes, even though these women were donating them well, as we said before, and they had the proper things in mind, they were doing Lashem Shemayim, not everybody did so. If so, if that's true, then that means that they used it. They, the Chassam Sofer said they specifically used it for this more than anything else because it was just to get rid of the dirt. That's what the mirrors were used for and nothing else. If you remember, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Mem Dalet Amud Beis, that says that Rabbi Gamliel allowed people to go into a bathhouse that had Aphrodite, the famous Greek, I guess you say goddess, in the front of it. And when they asked them, why are you going into that bathhouse? Aphrodite's in front. It's clearly an Avodah Zarah bathhouse. They said, that doesn't make something worshipable. Putting it in front of a bathhouse is almost making fun of the god. That's not something that makes it chashuv. So to speak, using it to make a kior, says the Chassam Sofer, is also not the same thing. It's not the same type of idea. There's a lot of other things that you can learn from the kior itself. There's a couple other things that we write down over here. The Bali Tosas have something. Rashi adds on that this would make peace between the man and the wife by sota water, that the sota would be used that way, that the kior was used to bring the water that would be drunk by the sota in order to see if she was good or bad. That also shows brazenness, etc. We're going to end with two little things. Number one, we learn from this, or seemingly, one way of a massive machlokas. The Pardes Yosef brings down, this is brought in the Chassam Sofer, Shalos Yeshivos Chassam Sofer, in five different places, as well as the Chavos Yair and the Maharil. Can you use something that is used by a regular hedyot, by a regular person, can you then donate it and make it into something for a shul? For example, I have a nice sweater, and I'm done using it. I'm done with the sweater. It has enough holes in it. Can I then stitch it up, reconfigure it a little bit, and then use it as a mantle for a Sefer Torah? It's a really nice sweater. It's 100% cashmere. It was really expensive when I bought it. I'm just not going to wear it anymore. Let's say it's not even ruined. It's a beautiful sweater, and I just want to donate it to the Aron Kodesh. Are you allowed to do that? Can you make a parochas out of a blanket that was used in someone's house? Can you do something that was used by a hedyot? Seemingly here we have mirrors that were used by regular people and they're being donated to the Mishkan. But the Chassam Sofer says, on the other hand, these blankets and those clothes are used by the person themselves. They're putting them on and wearing them, as opposed to the mirrors where you're not doing anything with them, you're just looking into them. So maybe you can use something for the Mishkan or for a soul that wasn't really used by you, just seen by you. You'd be able to have, let's say, something nice that you have on your shelves that you could donate to the Mishkan because it was never used. But something that you actually put on or wore or something, maybe not. There's a massive machlokas rishonim, achronim, I'm sorry, we are machmir, that we don't use anything that was used by a hedyot for a shul. But nonetheless, the Chassam Sofer seems to say in the end that you could be makel if it was something really, really nice. That if something is like that, you should be able to use it. And the last thing is following. The Toldos Yaakov Yosef, the famous Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, has one line that he says over here, that everyone has to look at others as if they're looking at a mirrored image. Think of that person as yourself. And really, the honest truth is that if a person would really do that, there's no way you would ever make fun of somebody else, because it's very difficult to make fun of yourself. You can do it, but you don't really mean it. And when you say it to somebody else, you think of that person as yourself, it's more difficult to do so. You have to dress up the image a little bit. You have to make it look a little bit better in order to learn how to like someone, to show yourself, to really see how could I get myself to like myself. How could I do that? That's why the Kohanim specifically used the kior, he says, in order to wash themselves. So they could see any possible issues they had with themselves, and any possible issues that they saw in others, they were able to cleanse themselves before they went into the avodah. They looked at themselves, they looked at all the Kohanim around them and said, what do I need to do to make more peace? And that was the reason why they were Oed Shalom, Barod Shalom, all of these Kohanim, that they kept working on themselves by looking at themselves and seeing, I'm doing something that I'm not right about. I have to work on myself a little bit further. I have to do more. And by doing so, they made themselves greater. That's what the Toldos Yaakov Yosef says. It's an amazing idea, but that's heading behind the cure. So just to summarize, what we went through is we went through the Medrash Tanhuman Rashi, explaining how this happened in the first place, what the woman did in order to get there. We went through Rav Dessler and Mitzav Melio, explaining the concept of Mitok Shalol Lishma Balishma. Rav Hirsch tells us that they donated them specifically to improve their bodies. We then did the Ibn Ezra, which shows that women are a little bit different, and they were able to bring themselves up just a little bit. We did, as well as that, the Shach, that says as well that there were tsanua, that these women went to the Beis Medrash to hear Moshe Rabbeinu's words. We saw the Chassam Sofer and the Netziv that went the opposite way, that it wasn't them that heard the word, it was that they told it to their children. We then pointed out the Ramban, that says that it seems that he only had a problem with this, but he didn't have a problem with the other items that were donated, and he asked why. We mentioned the Shach, of how you look at yourself in the mirror, how he's able to see the woman through that. And then we said the Chassam Sofer about the negative connotation, and we said the machlokas in the parties, Yosef, what to do about something in our house, and that's it. We ended with the mirrored image. Shkoyach, everybody, for coming. Let's stop and Marav. Let's get a Marav together. And we'll try to go around. I am looking for suggestions, so if anybody has suggestions of what we can get or what we can do, just come up to me and just tell me. Shkoyach, everybody. Yeah, let's get a Marav. Let's get a Marav.
Yeah.
One second.
Let's have it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, guys. I guess, does anybody want to finish off some of the drumettes?
You're always suggestions for what?
To what to do with, you know, food wise, drink wise, how to set up the tables, really. It was weird, but it was a long whatever. I'll get you some. I will get you one apple.
I'll
get you
one. I would actually eat it. I like ate a little bit of toast.
The toast is the healthiest thing you can see. Alright, but the wee nether, I will get something healthy. I will get something. I will make sure there's something real. Carrots, like carrots and... That's not bad. How about that? Carrots, celery sticks.
Yeah, it's true. You might not be able to fit in the door. It might burn as soon as you walk in.
You know what they need? We also need pitchers here. There are no pitchers for water.
Pitchers, yeah, right? Because we don't have water.
It's crazy. It's only
my entire life, we were in a setup. We had water for like 3 weeks.
That kind of. We got more than that. All right, let's get this Mars together. Come on, guys. Let's go. I'll take care of this.
You don't get that many.
We have any more of these?
Hey, God. So now, you want all those.
very hard to remember, but hey,
yeah. S L A E was three letters.
One, it's a great